It is Friday night, and I'm here, and Schmitty's here.
Yes, sir.
So I guess that means one thing. It's time for another edition of the Minnesota Beercast. What's happening?
Drinking some beer, hanging out, having some lovely conversation planned.
We'll see if we actually have those.
Wow.
So we're planning on them.
I mean, there'll be conversation. We'll see how lovely it is. Oh. I'm sure it'll be a good time.
Every conversation with you is lovely, Schmitty.
Thank you, sir.
Aw.
That's so nice of you to say.
And such a lie. Such an outright lie. God.
I fall for it every time. We've got a great show planned for you today.
I'm really excited for tonight's show.
Yeah, why?
It'll be a lot of fun.
Why?
Because some of my favorite guests are here.
Would you like to preview the show for the folks?
No, that's your job.
Oh, all right.
That's your gig. I don't want to step on your toes.
We've got Dan Parker, friend of the show, is going to join us. He's going to walk us through some food and some beer pairings. He might even test our abilities. I think we might do some blind tasting today. We will see how that goes. We've got
you didn't introduce him correctly.
Oh, I didn't?
No.
Oh.
It's not just Dan Parker, friend of the show.
What is it?
It is Minnesota's first advanced Cicerone.
Oh, Minnesota's first advanced Cicerone, ladies and gentlemen.
Dan Parker, friend of the show.
Yeah, thank you for all that wild applause. That's absolutely incredible. Let's just stick with friend of the show. I like that better.
You're taking a remarkably different tone than you were before we started recording.
I am the first advanced friend of the show. How about that?
Yeah, he brought Nick Hemphrey with him today. How you doing, Nick?
Pretty good, Schmitty. How are you?
Where, did you just meet you in an alley somewhere? How did you guys hook up today?
Yes. Funny story.
Yes.
Yes.
Just found me laying down in an alley.
So there I was.
Dan was out signing books, you know, as he's Minnesota's first advanced Cicerone. And I
just any book. It didn't matter. I was just like, hey, you got a book. Let me write on it.
For free, or was he charging?
30 cents a signature, and then...
Oh, the rates have gone up.
A couple of cans of hams. There you go.
Yes, they have.
And we've got Gabby from McKellar here as well joining us.
Yay.
Welcome back.
Thanks.
Let's start with your stuff, Gabby. You've poured us a delicious beer. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, this is Raspberry Blush. It's the most popular beer we are currently selling in the state of Minnesota from McKellar.
Did I say it wrong? Is it McKellar?
It doesn't matter. It's a made-up word.
And here, all these years, I thought it was somebody's last name.
It is.
And,
it's a first name, Mikkel, and a last name, Keller.
Oh.
And it's just the emphasis on the different syllable that, you know, and
syllable.
Yeah, Mikkel is the guy who signs my paycheck, so I say Mikkeler.
There you go.
That's where you put the emphasis. Always
the
on
the best
money.
Way to go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. But like, honestly, it doesn't matter. Nobody will get offended. It's more Danish to say Mikkeler. It's more American to say McKellar, so nobody cares.
So I was going to talk about the beer first, but why don't you get into the history of the brand a little bit? Because since we already started down that path, talk about Mikkeler and the origination and what they're doing, because I think a lot of folks who maybe have been into craft beer for a while know the brand and kind of know the history, but if you've not been following for a long time, it may be new to some folks.
And we haven't been in the state in 6 years at this point. We're newly reintroduced, but so how would you know if it's not around, you know? Unless you're trading for it or traveling to Europe and Asia frequently. So Mikkel came to America for college. He was a middle distance runner, and he fell in love with American beer, went back to Denmark, and all they had was Carlsberg. And that's pretty lame. So he started homebrewing in his kitchen and ended up making this beer, Beer Geek Breakfast, with some help from friends here in America. Peter from AleSmith helped him formulate this recipe.
That's probably the beer that they're probably most famous for, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And became the number one rated beer on Beer Advocate, even though it was homebrewed, which is crazy town, would never happen now. But, you know, his brother's bottle shop in Copenhagen, it ended up getting, you know, shipped all over to places. And that was the beginning of our company. He never wanted to have a brewery. He just wanted to make beer. So he contract brewed through some breweries in Europe and Sweden and Belgium for a long time.
Kind of known as a gypsy brewer. I don't know if you're still allowed to, like...
It feels a little racist, but we'll go with it.
Yeah.
I'm constantly questioning whether I can say things, you know? So many words we use just sound like old-timey racist things, and you're like, I just don't know.
The current vernacular, I'm not sure if it's still PC.
But we have our own breweries now, so we're not really a gypsy brewery. We still contract brew in Europe. The stuff we're getting here in Minnesota is all made at our brewery in San Diego, which used to be the Alesmith Brewery before they moved to a bigger location. So it's all kind of cyclical with them helping us start out and then us ending up buying their historic brewery.
But did you guys get a friends and family discount when you bought the brewery?
I can't even imagine. We also own a brewery at Citi Field in New York, so I mean that couldn't have been cheap.
Right.
I guess Mickle's doing okay.
Yeah, I mean, for doing all right. And you know, I think some people put a bit of a, I don't know, a spin on gypsy or contract brewing or whatever term you want to put on it, where it's not real brewing, right? Or it's not, it's not, you know, authentic, or it's not craft, or whatever you want to say. But there's been a lot of really great beer made in that way. And especially if you're having it made at a place that knows how to make really great beer, there's no reason why that beer that's being made can't be made well and can't be made consistently, right?
I mean, we've had examples of beer being made by the people who made it badly. You know what I'm saying? Like, the only thing Mickle is micromanaging about is his recipe formulation, and that's always been the case. And it kind of lends itself to what we're doing now. He was always very involved in, I mean, we brew at De Proof in Belgium, which once again, here in America, we don't know as well as we should, but like, it's fancy, you know? They know what they're doing.
It's good.
Yeah, we kind of freak them out with our hazy IPA obsession. Like, they do not understand what we're doing with these beers. But, you know, he's doing the same thing, basically, still. It's his brewers, his employees, but he's not there. He's trusting them to follow his recipe formulations.
Well, and I think, you know, when we think about brands locally, like, say, a Fulton or you know, any other number of brands, when you start off with your beer being brewed by somebody else, you save a tremendous amount of overhead, not having to buy, build your own brewery, invest in that equipment, have that startup capital. And then, hey, guess what happens later on? You get to do exactly what you want when you do decide to build your own brewery. You're not hemmed in by those constraints.
I think we've seen a million ways to start a brewing business, and I don't see any of them as right or wrong. I've always felt Mickler was super innovative and cool, like just very, very cool. Like, I was walking around Reykjavik and there's a Mickeller bar, you know, and there's one in San Francisco. There's a couple in San Diego. They don't care what people think about them. And I like that, you know, like, it fine. If you don't want to drink contract brewed beer, well, there's also a lot of beer that probably most people don't realize is contract brewed.
True.
And, you know, I'm not going to out anybody, but like, I'm sure they're pretty honest about it. But, you know, there's nothing to be ashamed of there if not wanting to own a brick and mortar brewery.
Well, I don't think that there is. If it's good, drink it. If you don't care for it, drink something else.
Yeah, there's plenty of examples of places that that do own their own facilities that are making really bad product. And then there are on the flip side of that, there are a lot of great places, including some of my breweries that I represent, where we do brew at other facilities, because there's sometimes if you need to invest that much money into the infrastructure to brew to the expectations or what the people want, the market, you are going to have to sacrifice a lot of different things. And so I think if you find a partner that works really well for you, it's a great model.
Hmm? Yeah, I mean, it's not about the facility. It's about the product, right?
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
It should be. I don't know. Well, I mean, like, you know, people love to...
Well, I think in some way, it does become about the facility, because we hear the drink local mantra over and over and over, right? I mean, it supports your local brewery and doing that by drinking local. Well, if a beer is brewed on contract, who is it local to?
Sure.
Is it local to who owns
it's still
the,
a local business?
Well, yeah, but is it local to the folks who are manufacturing it at the production facility? Is it local to the individual who owns the recipe? I mean, who is it local? Who's it local to?
I think it's local to both.
Right. And what is local and why does it matter? I think sometimes it's something that we don't even talk about it. Like, I'm in a very unique position to speak on this, being that 21st Amendment, you know, we're based out of San Francisco, but we brewed in Minnesota for a long time. Mm-hmm. And we would get menu placements because people thought it was a Minnesota beer. And great. That's amazing that we got that. But being that we're actually brewed out of California, we're not brewed in Minnesota at all anymore. Does that make us less quality product, or do people just like the product for what it was?
Yeah, it's all very good points. Let's continue the conversation after the break. You're listening to the Minnesota Beercast on AM 1130 and 103.5 FM.
Welcome back to this week's edition of the Minnesota Beercast. Advanced Certified Cicerone Dan Parker.
Minnesota's first.
I've never had a guest come in here and make bumper music demands the way Dan has.
Guess I'm on my way.
When you've got a rider, it's the kind of thing.
I'm still working on that bowl of green M&M's, Dan. Don't worry.
It was nice when Dan was a friend of the show. Those were good days. Now he's probably never going to come on again.
So we started.
I'll not forget the small people.
Little people that got you to where you are today.
Oh, nobody here is little. Come on. Let's be honest.
Damn.
So at the beginning of the last segment, we started talking about Gabby's beer at McKellar, and we kind of got into the history of the company, and we really didn't talk much about the beer at all.
No.
So let's cover that first beer that we first started talking
about.
Sure.
Well, the Raspberry Blush is a 4% Berliner Weiss made with raspberries and light roast coffee, which is pretty unique. I had never had a sour with coffee in it. I don't doubt that they exist, but that was my first.
Just pass that over here again, Dan.
Yeah, hey.
Really, really good.
I don't want to keep taking Gabby's time here, but I will say this is one of my favorite beers of the year so far. I've had numerous times to try this, and every time I see her, I'm like, do you have Raspberry Blush?
It's so good.
It's a round table conversation. You're not taking anybody's time.
I kind of feel like I am.
That's just like you, Dan.
No.
It's a nice change of pace. I mean, so much of what we have is IPAs or big stouts or, you know, that's a 4% beer. It's a nice, like, recovery step down from drinking some bigger beer. We also, we're not married to any of these at Mickler, which is another thing I like. Like, they're kind of our core beers right now, but if one of them just tanks, we're just going to shift focus.
It's interesting, you know, you'd say that there's coffee in it, but, like, I'm looking for the coffee.
It's light roast, and I think you get it more in the aroma.
For sure. Like, I can tell it's there in the aroma. But like on my palate, I don't get a ton of it on my tongue.
Really? Because the Berliner Weiss is acidic, the raspberries are acidic, the coffee's acidic. It's just like a harmony of flavor. Yeah, you don't really taste, I mean, predominantly raspberries, but
yeah.
Also I have a sensitivity to caffeine. And although it doesn't seem like a lot in there, like I get sweaty and twitchy from drinking it. So.
Yeah, I love that.
Is there coffee in this here?
Yeah. It's I feel really weird. I don't know. I'm going to go clean my house. So we also have Beer Geek Breakfast here. It's our original beer, 7.5% oatmeal stout with coffee.
Yeah.
And a lot of our beers have coffee in them. So I brought that guy. I brought some Tre Blood, which is tree blood in Danish, if you want a imperial stout with coffee and maple.
Well, let's open that one next.
Now you're
what
talking
do you mean,
my language.
Yeah, I'm going to go home and clean my house.
So last year, I think we produced something like close to 200 unique beers at our brewery. We're, of course, not going to get all of those here in Minnesota. That would be a logistic nightmare.
How many do you think make their way? Like, if you brewed 200 last year, how many of those
We've gotten an average of like 6 to 8 new beers a month.
That's a lot.
Divided up between package and draft. Like I only bring in 5 kegs of everything. That way everybody feels special if they buy something, which is really nice. It's a luxury I have because we have so much variety. This beer is special in my opinion, and I want to make sure that our consumers and our customers feel the same way. Windy Hill, Staff Magician, Raspberry Blush, and Beer Geek Breakfast are always available in cans. Package is, you know, depending on how busy of a month we're having for each thing, I'm having an inability to predict the sales levels with these guys because we're changing seasons right now and everything's still new. But
is that a problem? Do you run into an issue with consumers or retailers when you have brands, beers moving so frequently? Do you get people who, oh, well, so-and-so had this keg across town and now it's gone and I didn't get any? Or is it more like, well, what's, you know, I can't get that. What's the next good thing?
Yeah. So this is all new to me being from another brewery that was like, everything was so widely available, mm-hmm. you know, like Nothing was hard to come by from that brewery. But this beer, the shirt that I'm wearing is Freddie Mercury. It was our first limited beer we brought into the state. It's a New England double IPA. And I had people calling and screaming at my voicemail. And I was happy. Like, I had never had people that passionate about what I was selling. And I was like, dude, it's awesome that you're that mad at me. You know, like, we'll bring you some more stuff. It'll be okay. It's just beer, dude. Like, yeah. I'm sure you got seven things coming tomorrow that you've never had. And we live in a time of plenty. It was cool to be, you know, the pretty girl at the dance that day. But I'm never going to get it right. You know, I'm always going to overorder on the things that I think will sell well. And then inevitably the thing that I think nobody's going to want is going to be the popular one. So,
yeah. Yeah. It's gotta be difficult to kind of look in the crystal ball and see, I think this will go well. And I think this will be, you know, not such a heavy hitter. And then who knows? It's, you know,
so far the only predictor that has been reliable is whether some of our cans have like glittery holographic backing.
Yeah.
Those ones always sell out.
Ooh, so shiny, like, objects.
Yeah, yeah. The shinier the can, the more I should order of it. It's basically.
That was a question I was going to ask. You said that this last year your brewery made 200 different unique beers. How do you choose which come into this market? Is it dartboard style, or do you look at styles, or?
Typically there's some logistics involved too. So, like, I try to not bring anything in that's got less than 45 days before it's out of code. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we only get one truck a month here in Minnesota because we're not a huge state. Mm-hmm. So I sometimes just can't order certain things because they were brewed right after our truck shipped. And then by the time I get it, it'll be like, you know, 45 days past when it was made, and then it, you know, I so that kind of dictates it. We do some pre-ordering, but like, it's impossible to, you know.
I don't drink a beer if it's not like brand new and nobody's heard of it.
Only freshies.
Yeah,
45 days. I mean, come on,
right?
Like, my grandpa used to drink that beer.
We're still trying. Like, it's an impossible fight, but like, our 90 days on our IPAs, which is a little hard when you're shipping from California.
Well, but there's, I mean, you can find local beer that's not that fresh.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's nice to see that you're committed to keeping things nice and fresh on the shelf. I think
I'm really proud of all this stuff. I've been in beer a long time, and I don't get excited about much anymore. But the opportunity, yeah.
I'm old and jaded, Gabby.
I'm crabby. When this opportunity came along, it was just something that was like I wanted to be a part of. So, you know,
that's
trying to keep the integrity for our consumers is important to me because I'd like McKellar to be around for a long time.
Right.
Selfishly.
So we're coming up on patio season.
Yeah.
I think things are starting to warm up.
Everybody was power washing their patios yesterday. True story.
Are you kidding me? It was like over 40 degrees. I was sitting on a patio all day.
You got shorts on.
I'm wearing shorts and flip flops right now.
it's that time of year. What have you got anything in your beer collection today that you would you'd pound on a patio?
For sure, raspberry blush.
Yeah.
I mean. No doubt. I haven't given that beer to a single human being really that hasn't liked it, which is pretty impressive because beer can be a little polarizing. That's light. It's pink.
It's good. I would totally sit on a patio and down.
Yeah. And then if you're more of a hoppy person, which I tend to be as well, Staff Magician is our New England Pale Ale.
Let's pour some of that.
Yeah. All these guys come in like 16-ounce tall boys. So they're convenient for outdoor adventures.
I like the art too. It's kind of
yeah.
It's, how would you describe the artwork? It's
European. So our artist literally wrote a letter to Mikkel and was like, "I dig your artwork, but I think I can do it better." So now we have one guy doing all of this. Can't remember his name at the moment, but it's Henry and Sally are the two characters on all the logos. They have adventures. They turn into tree vampires. They dress up like Freddie Mercury. Staff nice. Magician has a cool story. Mikkel, our founder, is a little introverted, and he actually hired his friend Magic Malmstrom, a magician in Denmark, to do magic for him at like beer events, which now I want, you know, because like I'm not introverted, but I mean, to just be able to go like, and now magic.
Yeah, who doesn't want a magician?
Yeah.
Right?
Like, I know you wanted to hear about this, but
like stand up at a beer dinner and be like, "Well, that was a pale ale, but here's some card tricks."
I mean, I've been known to hey, want to see some magic? I can make this beer disappear.
But right,
that's,
right.
That's really the extent of my magic.
How do you do that?
Watch. You're not as advanced as you claim to be, Dan. So describe this this New England style pale ale for.
So Staff Magician's 5.5%. It's dry for the style, which I enjoy. The flavors on it are more like grapefruit, peel, lemon zest, which I also enjoy. Our New England IPA, Windy Hill, is a little bit more like mango navel orange. It's juicier. Not that I like pick a favorite or anything, but for my taste buds, the Staff Magician is preferable. Plus, I'm an old lady who likes lower alcohol in it. Beer now.
You can have more beer if it's lower alcohol.
It's true. That's right. I like a lot of beer.
There's exactly. Nothing wrong with that. Well, let's talk a lot more beer when we come back after the break. And I think we're going to talk cheese pairing as well with Minnesota's first advanced Cicerone, Dan Parker. After the break, you're listening to the Minnesota Beercast on AM 1130 and 103.5 FM.
Back, Minnesota Beercast. I'm Drew. That's Schmitty. I've been alone with you. Advanced Cicerone Dan Parker.
Hey.
Gabby from Mikkeller or Mikkeller.
The kids are giggling.
We don't know.
It doesn't matter.
We don't know what it's called.
Call it what you want as long as you buy it.
But the beer is fantastic.
Nick Hemp for singing.
What's up?
Hello, is it me you're looking for? I can see it in your eyes.
If anybody's wondering, this is
I can see it in your smile.
Dan's favorite music, Dan's favorite artist. And we wanted to honor him today because it is a big deal what he accomplished.
Just what to say.
Before we get into it, I do want to remind people, we do have our trip to Germany coming up for Oktoberfest.
Yeah, man.
September 25th. Spots and are still available. One fee gets you transportation, lodging, food, tours, VIP treatment at Oktoberfest in Munich. It's amazing. It's going to be incredible. And we want you to come with us. Go to beercasttrip.com or just go to minnesotabeercast.com and you'll find some links there.
Yep. It's going to be a good time. We would love for you to join us, and I cannot wait. I know my better half is going to join us, and I think yours is coming along as well. We're going to have to behave. At least I will.
Nah, I don't have to behave.
Nobody behaves in October. Well,
if my wife is there, I will have to at least sort of behave.
Try to attempt to?
Yeah.
There you go.
What will probably happen is I won't behave, but I'll get yelled at more. That's usually how that works.
That is an absolutely acceptable outcome. That is absolutely acceptable.
So if you want to see me get yelled at, come join us on the trip.
I was on the fence about the trip. Now I really want to go on the trip.
It'll guarantee the entertainment. I can promise you.
Nick, you going to have a beer? I'm just watching this play out.
Let's get into the meat of this segment. Dan Parker, we've been teasing it all show long and maybe giving you a little bit of a hard time, but becoming an advanced Cicerone is no easy task.
Is that something that many Minnesotans have accomplished up to this point? Well, actually, Nick.
seeing as how you're Minnesota's first.
Well, advanced Cicerone is obviously a higher level of the Cicerone program, but tell folks about just the Cicerone program to start off with, and then we'll get into the level you just recently achieved.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. And first thing I want to say is that I don't want to look at it as like there's levels in that way. Like a lot of times I'll walk into a retailer or I'll meet somebody and they say, oh, you're Cicerone, what level are you? And I don't think that that's the way that we should look at the whole thing. I don't think that it's necessarily indicative of where your status is in the industry or anything like that. So the whole level thing kind of, is a little weird for me that the Cicerone program does not call it levels 1, 2, 3, 4 for a reason. That being said, I think the Cicerone program is a super cool Well, maybe they do. I don't care. You got the website up? I don't know. I'm not paid by the program. I paid them.
No, you're being very humble, Dan. You worked really hard for what you did, and I appreciate you coming in and tell us about it. But the Cicerone program it's education-based, and there's certifications attached to it. But give us some examples of the things that you need to know to become certified as a Cicerone.
Yeah, absolutely. And so every level has different qualifications that you need to address. So when you first start getting in the program, you take an online quiz, which is called the Certified Beer Server. They take the Cicerone actual word title off of that for a reason, because it's a pretty entry-level test. It's relatively easy. It's great for base service staff and just for people to kind of test where they're at, see where they're at in the industry and their understanding. And I'll say this right now, the program is very all-encompassing. I have my strengths. I have my weaknesses. There's other people that are really strong in other areas. Mm-hmm. So then you go up to Certified Cicerone, which there are about, I think, 74 now in Minnesota, mm-hmm. Which is a good number, but it also shows you how hard it is being that. That means we're maybe passing 6 or 7 a year on average in this entire state. And so that includes an in-person exam. It's a 4-hour exam. You have to do a demonstration. You have to do a tasting component. So far removed from Certified Beer Server, which is just the online quiz. Take that up to advanced. This is actually, I did take it twice. So I was also the first person to fail.
always been a leader.
Keep
that in mind. Always
two firsts.
It's an 8-hour. It's a whole day.
Dude.
It's mind warping. There's 2 oral presentations. The tastings are above and beyond. It's really, really intense.
Can you give us some idea of like what's involved in that 8 hours? I mean, is that what kind of oral presentations are we talking about? How specific are the tastings?
Yeah, so that's a really, really good question. So the quiz itself is, they actually go to a little bit more of multiple choice versus the short answer they do in the certified level. But it's like 26 multiple choices, and there's a lot more on food. You have to identify certain food items that have nothing to do with beer, the idea is to bring people up to a certain understanding of food and beer or just the industry in general, because the idea of the certification is to get people to a point where they can be like a docent to somebody, like showing them, like kind of like guiding. And so like the oral exams, for example, in the advanced are, you sit down with, usually a master Cicerone, or if not Ray Daniels himself, who I sat down with once, and you, talk about styles or you talk about food pairing, and like the food pairing one, they put a dish in front of you and a beer, and you talk about the beer and you're supposed to be, use all your fluffy words with it and get really deep with it. And then the food, you're supposed to talk about that. And then you talk about if they work, if not, what would you change about it? What dish would you do? What beer would you do? So it's really like you have 10 minutes to kind of like give everything that you've got on the two things put in front of you. Whereas styles, it's basically like, hey, we're going to talk about this style today. And mm-hmm. they put one beer in front of you and you can tell them everything you know about that style. And then they give you the beer and you got to decide if it's a good example of that style or not. And then you'll talk about other related styles. So, I've had like robust porter, and then I would say that this is like really good robust porter, but also it's like really close to like a lower end imperial stout. And then they'd ask me about Irish dry stouts and say, well, what, for example, like what would be the grist difference or whatever. So there's a lot of technical stuff in there. The essay questions on the advanced level are just absolutely incredible. They're insane. They want you talking about water chemistry and
that's a bit much.
It is. It's really difficult. And we have one person who's taking the master test, and I can't imagine how much deeper they get in that, because I just felt like there's nothing, there's not a whole lot more to delve into in some of these subjects.
Yeah, it sounds more than I would ever want to get into. And from the consumer perspective, I know I've talked to friends who are super into craft beer, and want to become a Cicerone or an advanced Cicerone or a master Cicerone, and I sometimes wonder why. Like to me, it seems more of an industry type of program. Would you agree with that?
I can agree that people can see it that way. I've actually taken a whole different tack with it. Like, it doesn't mean anything to me. Like, I've been doing this for a long time. I can continue to have my career the way I have it, with or without this.
Mm-hmm.
As can most of the certified Cicerones that are out there in the state, or people looking to do it.
Right.
For me, it's a challenge. I liken it to like my running. You know, when I first, like, I did a 5K, I was like, oh my God, that's like really cool. And then I did a 10K, and they're like, hey, someday I'll do a 10 mile and then a half marathon. And then some nut decided to do a marathon, and now I can't go back. And so for me, it's like that, always like that next level of pushing myself. It gives me a goal. When I took the advance for the first time and I didn't pass, I walked out there saying, you know, I know what I don't know now. And
right.
it made me feel really good. Like, hey, there's a lot that I can learn. And even now I got my results back and they tell me a lot about what I didn't know and what I didn't get right. There's a lot more I can learn.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is, should be more important than just getting the shield on your business card and walking around with it.
Have you noticed any demonstrable changes in like your palate or what you seek out or what you enjoy as you've gone through this process? Or is it still like you enjoy what you enjoy? You just happen to know a lot more about a lot of other styles.
Yeah, I'd say it's more of the latter. You know, I've been pretty much I'm a pretty easy beer guy. I like really nice lagers and pale ales. I'm not like jumping all over what's happening, you know, every 2 seconds in the beer industry. Very classic in that way, but it did make me understand them, especially the first time I would go around. I would sit down and I would write down a list of classic examples of beers, and I'd have my wife go buy them and then serve them to me without me seeing them. And I would have to learn exactly why a Helles is different from a Pilsner, you know, like, and now I can sit down and go, I get it. You know, I really get that these are different styles. Whereas in the past, you know, I'd just take a beer and drink it and, hey, it's delicious. I don't care if it's a Helles or Pilsner or Kolsch or whatever, you know, it was very similar, but I can actually understand that now. And, I think it's made me appreciate it more.
It sounds like it just adds to your enjoyment instead of like the possibility is it could distract from your enjoyment significantly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good to know. I tried to have my wife go buy me beer and serve them to me, and it did not turn out nearly as well as your experience.
It's for science.
Maybe it's the way you ask.
Again, lots more yelling. It's kind of a theme.
She'd probably be down on it if it was an off flavor thing, you know, because then it's like basically poisoning.
Well, and to be fair, when you're tasting like traditional examples of your European beers in Minnesota, it's usually an off-flavor taste.
Yeah. Yeah.
Zing.
You guys need to drink more of that stuff. Keep it fresh.
All right. Let's take another break. We'll be back after this on the Minnesota Beercast on AM 1130 and 103.5 FM.
Final segment. Of tonight's Minnesota Beercast.
Lady, I'm your knight in shining armor.
This goes out from Dan in South St. Paul.
You have that'd be St. Paul Park.
No, different Dan. Jeez.
Nope. There are no others.
All right, I'm very excited for this last segment because I feel like I didn't realize this, but I learned during the break. Like, Dan's like going to put us to the test.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
On something.
We're going to do it.
Surprise. Pop quiz.
Surprise. Let
me hold. Pop quiz. You've got 4 beers in front of you.
What do you do?
One's light, one's dark. What do you do?
Drink them both?
Okay, right answer.
Fine. You well, that was a short segment.
So tell us, we're going to do a little guessing game here, Dan. You're going to proctor. What's we're not going to pass, I'm sure.
I hope so.
It's kind of a little...
If we do we get to call ourselves advanced Cicerones?
No. You're the only one who gets to taste?
Actually, yes, if you pay a ton of money and you take the test and you pass, yes.
Okay. I don't know, Nick, he didn't pour you any beer. Don't look at me.
We had to keep this very secret. The idea here is we're pitting you two against each other to see who can guess. There's okay. 4 beers in
yeah,
front of you.
You didn't have to pit me. I would have liked beer.
There's beer Schmitty's right near here.
Oh, I thought it was good.
So I gave you 4 beers.
Okay.
And what I want you to do is I want you just to give them each a try, smell them, look at them, taste them, and let me know if you think you can identify the style.
Oh, jeez.
Man, I'm nervous.
I thought you were going to give us two choices to pick from.
I can do that. You know, I can if you want.
It'd be a lot easier if you did.
Okay, so let's.
You know, we bank on our credibility here on this show. You realize that? Like, this is like a huge.
So let's go into to glass number one.
Yeah, it's a small bank account.
Glass number one, which Schmitty is not drinking. He's drinking glass number four. So let's start the other way. The one on your left, the first of the light.
It's a pretty color.
It's a great color. You know, maybe tell me what you're smelling, what you're tasting.
I feel like I'm smelling cloves.
Okay.
Let me a little. I get like no nose on this, like whatsoever.
Okay. I do. I get a little. It reminds me of a classic Hef. I mean, that's what it smells like to me.
Okay. Good guess.
I didn't say that's what it was. That's what it reminds me of. No, if that's what it is, then that's my guess.
TikTok.
No, I don't get really much nose. I get kind of a little banana.
Yep.
in the flavor.
Mm-hmm. That's what makes me think it's okay. A Hef.
I don't get much of that clove that you mentioned, but I get bananas, the main flavor.
So everything we're saying is very yeast derivative.
Right.
You know, we're talking about fermentation product. So I would say before I tell you what the first one is, let's go into number two and see what we think about that one.
So this one's a little lighter in color. It's more of a straw yellow, would you call that?
Yeah.
It's got more of
a good descriptor.
Of a finer head on it. White head.
It's not very clear.
Ah, excellent.
This is great radio.
Yeah, you guys need to talk while we're tasting.
I think it's really, I mean, like, it's interesting. I think blind tasting is always really humbling because as smart as you may think you are, like, without any context, it's hard to identify things. Plus, like,
absolutely.
We all taste things differently. We have individual taste buds.
No
we
doubt.
Have, we have individual life experiences. I happen to have a very strong sense of smell, like ridiculous. Like I can smell things from the inside of my house outside.
So, God, you must be freaking out in the studio right now.
So this is...
It does smell like cheese in here, but that's not bad.
That was before I brought cheese in, too.
I get very, like, very thin body on this. I don't get much flavor character at all. Almost no bitterness or hop content, really.
No, it's pretty balanced. It's pretty mild. I do taste corn. I feel like there's a
interesting.
There's a bit of a corn flavor in there, kind of a sweetness.
So between the first two, you know, we talked about a little bit banana clove on the first one. Did we talk about any of that with the second one?
Like not at all.
No.
So that's really interesting because we taste them kind of out of order. So the first one was a saison.
Okay. That would have been my second guess.
Okay. Of course. and the second one was actually a Belgian wit. And so
I would not have guessed that.
Interesting that we get some of that because we tasted the saison first. We're not then tasting some of the characteristics that are coming out of that.
Now that you said it's a Belgian wit, it's like now I can smell it and I can go, okay, yeah, I get it now. But I would not have guessed that.
Yeah, and it's American brewed, but it's very very close to traditional style for sure.
That's one of the things that I hate when doing like beer judging and sitting with. Like people at a table and they'll start saying stuff out loud and polluting your palate.
It influences your brain.
Yeah. Like, oh, now somebody said black pepper and now all I can taste in that beer is black pepper. And it's like, I didn't taste that before you said something, you jerk.
Yeah. So go ahead.
I was going to say one thing that I learned from a salesperson a while back was like, his thing was like, I don't like telling people what they should be tasting because mm-hmm. everyone tastes things different. Just describe the style of beer, describe some vague descriptors, like mm-hmm. the style, color, mouthfeel, but like leave flavors and aromas for that person to interpret it because I taste things different than you might taste.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm on the opposite end of that thinking because I actually feel like the general public is so ill-equipped to like identify the flavors that are actually happening to them. And it's not a dig at them. It's mm-hmm. just they haven't trained. They haven't practiced. They don't know how to do it. So I found
you
like for
learn.
Them to like embrace the flavors, I just literally have to tell them what they're tasting.
I think that
helps. I mean, as someone who fits the description you just named, I mean, I really appreciate that.
Yeah,
I do. I mean, because I'm not a Cicerone. I'm not an expert. I know what I like. I know what I think tastes good. But you know, I told this story on the show a couple weeks ago. It wasn't until I went to a beer tasting that I really started to really explore craft beer, because they explained to me all the different styles and what to look for in the styles and what to taste in the styles, and it gave me a much broader appreciation.
So if you guys want to delve into numbers 3 and 4, I'll kind of pick up and talk about that a little bit while you're tasting those two. I find it like, you know, I do teaching at St. Paul College, and I do some staff educations and things like that. And I find it really important in that atmosphere to never tell people what to taste, because you need to let the entry level drinker learn based on their perception. There's a lot of like books that will say like, you know, if you think you're smelling grandma's potpourri, that's fine. Say it. And then we can delve down into that and find out you're thinking about rose or geranium or something like that.
But that's in a teaching context.
Sure.
I'm going on sales.
So that was my next point. Yeah. So that in sales, when I bring my product to the market, I want to tell them what they're getting out of it. Because when I bring, for example, Funkworks White, which you guys just had, I want to tell them that, you know, that they're going to get this super spritzy, amazing, like patio beer that's got, you know, these like light lemon undertones and, you know, really, really neat and kind of like wheat character to it. So there's different ways of approaching it based on the consumer.
So is number 3 supposed to be a Belgian golden strong, and is number 4 an Oud Bruin?
All right. So what
I hadn't tried 4 yet, but 3 I was just going to say it tastes incredibly Belgian to me.
Okay.
I'm getting a lot of the yeast characteristics. I'm reminded of the first beer in a lot of ways.
You both nailed it. You absolutely nailed it. It is a Belgian golden strong. Very, very nice. And that is Deceit.
That is
by Funkworks.
That is quintessential Belgian. I mean, that when I think of Belgian beer, that's the flavor that I think of.
It's pretty distinctive. It's hard for even me to mess that up.
Yeah. And actually, I brought this one for one of our cheeses that we'll get into later. But
let's get into the cheese now.
You want to do cheese?
Yeah.
All right. What was the last one? It was not an Oud Bruin. It wasn't even close.
It was not an Oud Bruin.
You weren't even close.
What was it?
It was the last thing I want when I'm hungover, is what it was.
What was it, Gabby?
That's a double.
I'm guessing barley wine.
Gabby wins. Okay. Gabby's the winner. This is 2014 bourbon barrel aged Brooklyn Hand and Seal barley wine.
I mean, it's very tasty.
It's very special.
It is extremely special.
It makes you salivate a lot.
But as you said, it's not a good one for if you are hungover.
Shout out to Moscow on the Hill and their lovely horseradish vodka shop.
Oh,
all right. I'll tell you what, we are about out of time for the broadcast portion of the show.
But I'll
tell you,
we get to tell a story.
No. What we'll do. This is the broadcast portion. So we got to wrap it up for time constraints for on the air. But we will do a special podcast only additional segment. We will do a beer cast post show just for podcast listeners. So if you're listening to this on the air on Twin Cities News Talk on Friday night, Saturday morning, Sunday morning, whenever you're listening to this, we're going to go do an extra segment. So make sure to go get that iHeartRadio app, download it, subscribe to the Minnesota Beer Cast channel, or just go to minnesotabeercast.com and look for this episode. And there will be an additional segment on the end where we're going to talk some cheese. We're going to do some cheese and beer pairings.
And what not to do if you're a Cicero.
And we got an amazing Cicero story.
We've been really anticipating this story.
So, all right. Thanks for listening. Dan, Gabby, thank you guys so much. Awesome show. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode. Stick around for the post show coming up.
See ya. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
All right, here we go. It's the BeerCast post show, podcast only, exclusive content.
Raise the roof and have some fun. Throw away.
See, this is why I saved this song, because I knew we were going to be doing
the music play on,
an
play
extra
on,
segment
play
where,
on, play on.
Where we got weird.
Everybody sing.
Things are going to get weird up in here.
Only one of these beers is 13.5%, so I don't know what you're talking
about. Is it this Oud Bruin?
No.
Fiesta. It's been a long time since we did a post-show segment.
It has been. It's been a while.
It's been too long.
But tonight's show, I think, absolutely warrants it.
Absolutely.
Hey, does this disco ball work in here?
Fog machine.
Engineers get mad when we turn on the fog machine.
Oh, they love when KDWB does it.
No, it's all fine for Dave Ryan. Drew and Schmitty turn it on, and everybody gets a, you guys are weird.
Oh, man, this cheese is good, Dan.
So good.
All right, I'm coming in there and getting some cheese.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't get any cheese?
I'm going to bring you some cheese. You stay where you are, you very important human being.
While you bring him cheese, Nick, tell us your Cicerone story. Is your on button on?
There we go.
Yes.
There we go.
So, was that a beer fest? Pouring beers for a company I used to work for. Sitting there talking to another coworker, and this guy walks up to the booth, and we're like, oh, sweet. But he's walking up real slowly, like.
Yeah.
And to preface this is what you should not do if you have your Cicerone certification of any sort.
I can't wait to learn.
Like, over-served slowly guy, or just like...
Nope. Slowly. He made a very theatrical entrance of taking off his jacket so we could all see his Cicerone, certified Cicerone button.
This was not my best day, okay? I'll say that right now.
I wasn't going to call you out, buddy. Come on. But he just takes his jacket off and just kind of walks up in a very uncomfortable, I don't know why you would walk like this, but like trying to present his badge is up there, that he's a certified Cicerone, and we kind of like look at me and my coworker are like, oh, this is going to be fun. And so we're like, what would you like? I'm a brewer at this brewery at the time, and coworker is also a brewer, and the other one is also works in, like, is an educational person at the company.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all like, oh no, this is going to be great. But the guy is just like, yeah, well, I would like to try that new beer that you guys just put out. We're like, okay. Hands the beer, and he stands there. Doesn't even move out of the way because there's a line, like, not moving out of the way of the line behind him. Just stands there, elbow on the table, just like taking sips. Yeah, this is just, it's still a pretty green beer. Okay, well, what do you mean by green? Nothing else to say. It's still a really green beer. Like, well, you mean under fermented? Is there too many hops in there? Is there just some like vegetal flavor? It's just a really green beer.
What did he?
It was the most awkward I've ever felt as a brewer at an event. Try to interact with somebody.
Are you comfortable with me telling like where you worked at that point?
Go for it.
This man worked for Summit Brewing Company at this point when this happened.
Yeah, they might know a few things about brewing.
Yeah, yeah. So they've been around since 1986.
Yep.
Their beer was probably green in late 1985.
Right.
There's a fair amount of people that beer is enjoyable for them because they make other people feel bad.
Right.
Yeah. And that's both lame and bogus.
But the way the guy, I'm going to have to do this, and this is great for radio because it's going to be a visual gag. But the guy walked up like this. He was just like.
So he's sauntering up now.
He made eye contact with us.
Unzipping his vest and projecting.
I believe he was wearing a camisole.
Projecting his shirt as he
didn't
as he
point,
up.
But he kind of alluded to a point to his badge. And it was,
did he flash like the certified Cicerone hand signs too?
Oh, do you guys not know those?
Yeah. We're not supposed to know about those.
You're like the Masons. You have a secret handshake.
So anyways, if you go through with your Cicerone certification.
That's the
of any level.
Unknown level 5.
Fantastic. No, like, you know, learn things.
Hail Hydra.
Educate yourself. all of that stuff. But just don't be a dick about it. Like, yeah. This
it's
guy
the
was.
One rule, really. Don't be a dick.
So, yeah. I feel like I need to step up on this one because, like, I have a really hard time some like with the certifications sometimes because I feel like they're valuable. Mm-hmm. But education, I do know, so I'll take, this might be the only time I'll ever do this, but I will quote Chris England from Beaver Distillery. He was talking about some of his cicerones, and he literally goes, yeah, a lot of these guys are running around using this thing as a sword instead of a shield. And I kind of like what he said there, mm-hmm. because just because you passed the test doesn't mean you have the right or the ability to run around and tell other people what they're enjoying, what they're doing, what is absolutely perfect in every single way. Obviously, like, you know, we've been talking about, I now have taken this advanced test, mm-hmm. and passed, but I have so much to learn. I'm sitting here right now trying to learn things from this room, and that should be the goal from what we're doing. We should not be running around trying to tell people what they think about things.
Well, I think that, you know, a lot of what we get now in the world is from not our friends and our neighbors and the people that we should be enjoying beer with, the people that we spend time together with. It's from an internet forum, or it's from, or it's from an app, or whatever. And those are not necessarily valued communications, right? It should be the people you're interacting with on a regular basis. Those should be the people that you're listening to, and the people that you're getting information and valued interactions from. Because really, who cares what, you know, Beer Lover 99 thinks on the internet forum? Because who knows if he's an expert? And who really cares anyway?
Oh, you've read Beer Lover 99?
Did I out you? Did I out you? I'm sorry, Nick. You have to find a new handle now.
Damn it, you outed me!
Well, let's talk about some of the cheese that you bought, Dan, because you brought us some delicious cheese to pair with some of the beers that we had. Let's get into it before I eat it all.
I've got plenty more, so don't worry about that.
Well, you say that like it hasn't happened.
Well, I'm like 9/10 of the way there, so if we don't talk
about it. So as you're licking your empty plate, the flavors you're going to get. So I brought cheese specifically because, you know, my strongest suit in all of beer is beer and food. And, I think that cheese is such an important part of that, for a lot of reasons. Just beer is the best beverage to pair with most foods, but specifically cheese. And I know there's like a lot of, probably not listening to this show, but like wine people are like, mon dieu, I can't believe you just said that, you know, like, but I like, we actually have a lot to bring to the table. And so, I brought three different cheeses to go with three of these different beers, that you actually just did in your blind taste test and got horribly wrong.
fail.
Well, you got one of them right. One of them right. That was amazing. I
think they did pretty good.
I wanted more failure, to be honest with you. But.
I think that you were a little hard on them by picking such similar styles.
I had
in my fridge, Gabby.
I will say that
I'm just going to say they have a radio show about beer.
The barley wine, I will admit, there's no reason I should have got that one as wrong as I did. So that's okay.
So I brought three cheeses, and I did specifically think of one beer for each of these, but with the four beers that I brought and some of the other beers that Gabby's brought, I think we're going to find some really cool ideas and revelations with like beer and cheese and like what's going to work and what's not going to. So the very first cheese is Cypress Grove. It's the one that may or may not have like a line down the middle, if you got that piece. It's a goat's milk cheese with vegetable ash. It's my favorite cheese of all time.
Is that what rennet is?
Rennet is actually the...
it's the acid from the stomach, right?
It's basically a bacteria from the stomach of an animal, or you can make a vegetable rennet. So vegetable rennet, so that's what coagulates the proteins in the milk to create the cheese. But this is my favorite cheese of all time. And so I brought this one to pair with the Saison. So if you have any of that left, or if you need me to pour you some of that because you're licking your plate and your glass at the same time. But at the same time, we do have the Golden Strong and the White Open. So all of these could go very well with this cheese. I just felt the Saison was going to be a good pairing because we want to match intensities, mm-hmm. first and foremost.
I feel
so.
Like it's a very delicate cheese for being like a goat cheese. Like a lot of times I'll get a goat cheese and it's very, very funkified goat, right? Like not in a bad way, but it's just like, it's very goaty. How's that for a descriptor?
That's a really good descriptor because it's hard to describe
that. Is goaty,
right? Go figure.
It's very hard to describe that goaty flavor. Like when you have like a chev, which is like that fresh goat cheese everybody knows. When you get a goat cheese salad, that's what's on there. You know that like kind of barnyard flavor that you're getting, but it's really hard to put that into words, right? This cheese is far more complex than that. And I felt the Saison was going to stand up to it because it's, first of all, it's 5.5% or 5.8% alcohol. So it's got a lot of that to cut through some of the richness. And then, it's got a lot of those yeasty flavors that you were pulling out of that beer, to kind of stand up and match with it and kind of marry with it and carry along.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the blue. Cause
I was actually going to ask one quick question about this cheese, Dan. The line that you describe going down it, what is that?
That is a layer of vegetable ash.
Vegetable
now, does
what?
That add flavor
ash.
To
A-S-H?
Now, does
is that like the thing you're supposed to take out of the shrimp?
You do you, brother. I'm dirty.
No, every once in a while you forget he's back there in that other room, and then he just chimes in with this. Just
what is the function
I like
of
to
having
pick my spots?
What is the function of having a line of vegetable ash?
I'm sure there's more functions than
is
like,
it flavor.
So no, not really. I'm sure there's more functions than like what I'm aware of. I'm not a master cheesemaker. I'm not an advanced cheesemaker.
You're not Minnesota's first advanced cheese maker.
I'm not. Never will be. I know that I really don't want to speak to like what they're getting out of it, but it's not a flavor component. I know that there's like it does change the chemistry. I don't eat this cheese specifically because it looks like that. That it's very iconic when people see that ash down the middle. I eat this cheese because it's just a really, really wonderful example of a goat cheese.
Well, and Humboldt Fog has to be one of the like most recognizable name brand cheeses.
I think so. I have a Humboldt Fog t-shirt.
Yeah.
So.
Nice. And I mean, I'm a bit kidding. Of a cheese nerd, so like, I guess that's, you know, like, I'm like, I like this cheese.
Where do you guys go for?
You don't know Humboldt Fog.
Where do you guys go for cheese in the Twin Cities?
So I've got a couple of spots that I absolutely love. You know, like I'm just gonna throw it out there. A lot of these mass grocery stores are doing a really good job right now. Like Hy-Vee,
has good cheese.
Hy-Vee is popping up like with these really, really good stores now that where they've got not only good cheese but people that know about it. Mm-hmm. I went out and geeked out about like goat cheese that was in like marinated in oil with a guy at Cottage Grove and Hy-Vee.
They hire real chefs at Hy-Vee. Like it's like,
legit. Yeah. I absolutely agree with that. And so I like that place. I got all of these from Gasta in Keg and Case. Super knowledgeable. They had like pretty much like I was like, oh, I got to go to this show. I got to get there. I got to stop at this place. And then I stopped in there. I said, they have everything that I want, but it's this little tiny kiosk. It's a 5x5 kiosk, and they had everything that I needed. It was absolutely
That's impressive.
Yeah, it really was. Really was.
The co-ops all have good cheese, too. For what it's worth.
Yes, yeah. And they also know their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most important thing. If you walk into a place and somebody's like, I don't know, walk away. Go buy it somewhere else.
And I by no means know everything, but like you just start to like know what you like. Mm-hmm. You know, like I like sheep's cheese because it's mad fatty. And I want literal crystals in my cheese when I eat it. So,
you just brought up sheep's milk cheese and you brought the blue. We can dive into that. That was supposed to pair with this barley wine. That is a sheep's milk blue. And it does use the Roquefort, basically bacteria or like fungal infection to turn it blue. I usually use like a Colson Basset, cheese for this, but I didn't want something necessarily so big and over the top. So this is actually out of Wisconsin. This is Hook's Little Boy Blue.
I'm not crazy about blue cheese, but like the intensity of this cheese, it's not like super intense, but there's enough there for it to really stand up to the flavors in that barley wine.
And the range of blue cheeses, that was a pretty mild one, and it was delicious.
Yeah, I think it was like kind of middle range. It's got that some saltiness, like some crystals, like right next to the blue veins. But this barley wine is big, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's barrel aged. It's got a ton of alcohol on there. It needs something to stand up to it. Now, this is one of my favorite pairings: is a barley wine and blue cheese, and like often. We'll hear people pair barley wines with other like heavy flavored cheeses. I get that. But this, the salt and the bitterness and the sweetness, like just kind of all like blow up and go away. Mm-hmm. And you're left with nothing but pure flavor.
Yeah, it'd be good with that weird brown, like, Norse cheese, too. Have you guys ever
had
that?
Oh, it's weird, dude.
What? Jay toast?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love Jay toast.
I think it would be good.
What is this stuff?
So they,
it's like dessert cheese.
Yeah, they caramelize the milk while they're making it.
Nutty cheese.
It's weird.
It's black magic.
Now you're talking.
Yeah.
It tastes like a Brock's caramel mixed with cheese. It's gross. It's weird. I love it.
You have to do it during the winter solstice and worship Odin as you make it.
Yeah.
You might have to kill a guy to do it, but totally worth it.
There is no might in this scenario.
Just trying to be cool.
And then the other cheese that I brought was a kind of a cloth-bound cheddar.
It's from Missouri.
Yeah, so it's from
Missouri,
but from an Iowa cheese company, Milton.
Huh?
Yeah, I know. I don't know.
Are they gypsy cheesemakers?
They must be.
No. Well, that can't be any good if they're not making it. So
I brought that to pair with the Deceit, the Belgian Golden Strong.
Okay.
I thought that some of like the sweet notes, the richness, that we're talking about pretty similar intensity levels in the fact that Deceit is a higher alcohol level. It's got some punchiness in its yeast characteristics. And then the cheese itself, really nice sweetness, very crumbly. So I think that the beer will kind of help that along. But I'm very excited about this. I just basically went up to them and said, do you have anything like a cloth bound cheddar? Which basically means that they actually wrap like kind of like a gauze cloth around their cheddar. And then they get different bacterial components that go into cheese, which sounds gross, but that's very important for cheese and beer.
No, I mean, the bacteria is what gives cheese that. That oomph that, you know, that makes it unique in so many ways.
It's just like, I mean, beer and cheese are so similar in the fact that they're both grain derived. I mean, you know, or grass derived at least. You know, cheese is milk, so it comes through a cow that eats grass out in the field, hopefully, unless they're stuck in a CAFO somewhere, like munching on somebody's leftovers. And then it's processed through a microbe, yeast, and we get a similar product. So there's we already have a lot of parallels at our disposal when we're talking about cheese and beer together.
What is your guys' favorite cheese-beer pairing? I think mine was by far they were all good. The blue and the barley wine, I think, was my favorite. What do you think, Nick?
I didn't really do any pairing. I just ate some cheese.
I ate a whole plate of cheese and then I felt shame.
Why would you ever feel shame?
No shame.
I really enjoyed the goat cheese.
Yeah.
Really good. It had that goat cheese flavor, but it was more, like you said, it was more on the mild side, and it was just, I very much enjoyed that.
Nothing in my heart ever stands a chance next to Humboldt Falk.
So. True.
And I actually like that beer. Or I like that with stouts generally, which I didn't.
Humble Fog?
Yeah.
Oh, that's you got a stout over there. Let's try this.
I know. I should have done that.
We still have cheese left.
There's more cheese.
Drew, what'd you think?
I also didn't really focus on the pairing. I just ate a bunch of really delicious cheese.
I knew why I liked you.
But the one with the ash, the vegetable ash,
goat cheese.
That's the goat cheese.
That's the Humble Fog.
That was my favorite.
Like I said, that is my favorite cheese, like hands down, buy cheese, period.
That was amazing.
But my favorite pairing, and it always has been, always will be, that's why I brought it, is a barley wine with a big blue. There's just something magical that happens between the two, and I've had people that don't
I agree with you 100%.
Thank you.
Well, let's have some more beer. Let's have some more cheese. Let's call it a day for this episode of the Minnesota Beercast. Thanks so much for joining us, and we will see you next time. Thanks, Nick. Thanks, Dan.
Oh,
thanks,
Gavin.
Good to see you, buddy.
I want
to
get.
Cheers.
Hold on. We can't end yet because I got.
Hold on a second.
I got to go out with some.
You gotta.
Yes.
I got to go out with some Lionel.
All right.
Oh yeah. Can you feel it?
You might want to find like a format change for your radio station. It might just be all Lionel all the time. Damn. This song is like blue cheese and barley wine. Yeah.
Your musical taste is as refined as your palate, sir. All right, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode. Appreciate it. Go sign up for the Germany trip.
See ya.
See ya. Cheers.